In this three-month period, Reverend Sada will be here, and also maybe there might be invited monks to do the paritta chanting every night. So the paritta chanting will, for the Sunday, the official opening ceremony will be at 7:30 p.m. for devotees to arrive here. And the Chief Reverend Dhammaratana would commence around 7:45 to 8 p.m. The paritta chanting will commence, and it is going to last for the whole of the Wasa period. So this paritta chanting will be 9 sutras. Each of them will be chanted for 108 rounds throughout this 3 months period. Okay, so devotees are encouraged to participate during the nightly chanting for blessings. All right. So if you are interested to become co-sponsors, we have forms here. And if you would like to know more details, I have already sent out the email. Alternatively, you can look at the notice board where the forms and other particulars are pinned up there. Okay? Now, tonight's talk is how to be a true Buddhist. We all come into contact with Dharma sometimes through friends and having read books or listened to talks. And normally our knowledge, it's most of us are quite theoretical. So we also have a Vesade Buddhist, meaning that once only a year they will come to the Buddhist monastery. And also you can say that those Chinese New Year Buddhists as well, once a year only they go to the Buddhist temple. But whatever it is, that the Dharma knowledge, especially those of you here, and others, of course, that we have sort of consistently pursued to acquire this Dharma knowledge, having appreciated what the Buddha had taught, and that theoretical understanding, we put it into practice. And the question here is that if we have understood rightly what the Buddha meant, then in that case, we can be said to be a true Buddhist if we practice accordingly. But what we understand is our own knowledge and what we learn from the teachers and all those. But are this knowledge and we apply, do we really understand what is a true Buddhist like? So Brother Teo would like to share with us what the meaning of to be a true Buddhist or devotee of the Buddha. So how we view the world or view ourselves, existence, and how we conduct ourselves accordingly. So when we have rightly understood what the Buddha meant, then when we live accordingly, it will be truly a blessing. So Brother Teo will share with us what exactly is a true Buddhist. And I think that having listened to his talk, we will become to realize that there are still quite a number of things we are lacking in our understanding. So Brother Teo will lead us.
Yes, in the puja. Okay, thank you so much for the kind introduction, Brother Teo. We will commence with our usual pre-puja. We compose our mind, develop the sadha, the faith, then pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we shall commence our pre-puja chanting. We shall pay respect to Triple Gem. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.
Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami kamesu micchacara ramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Surameraya majjhapamadatana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu
Mindfully to the Buddha. Okay. A very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we meet again after almost a month. When I came, I saw the whiteboard. They haven't rubbed off what we shared the last time I was here. So it was good. So we keep it. I only wrote the new title up there. So today's topic is something quite unique. If you read up here, today's date, 24th July, 2015. So it's a Friday. The topic chosen by Brother Gan was actually another one. He suggested to me the four Brahma Vihara states. Then he said, maybe we can share on these four Brahma abiding or Vihara state. Then also to expand on how they can be developed to help us to cultivate the meditation of Buddha Dhamma. Then I told him, why not we change it to this topic, because this is more relevant to life and to the Buddhist community. And within this topic, if I have time, we can also touch on the four Brahma Vihara state. Today's topic is about how to be a true Buddhist devotee of Sakyamuni Buddha or Lord Buddha. This title may appear quite strange to most of you, because to your mind, you believe, is it that difficult to be a Buddhist? I just profess that I'm a Buddhist, then I'm a Buddhist. Or I just go to temple, pay my respect, listen to Dhamma, or do some of those Buddhist activity, then I can call myself a Buddhist. That's why the title is very specific. How to be a true, the word true, Buddhist devotee of Lord Buddha. Because that word Buddhist is a very loose word. Anybody can claim to be a Buddhist as long as they have faith in the Buddha and his teaching. But how many of them truly understand the deep meaning within? And this topic come about was because over the years, I came to observe a very important, shocking fact within the Buddhist community. Even as Buddhists, most of us, many of the so-called Buddhists, they don't really truly have the clear understanding of how is it like to be a true Buddhist devotee of Lord Buddha, to be worthy of him. And if you yourself don't have that understanding and quality, how are you going to help people who totally don't have any knowledge of what this teaching is all about? Then how are you going to like explain to them or give them the confidence to encourage them to come and find out for themselves so that they can also cultivate this teaching and to become true Buddhists who can be a great blessing to all? So that was the reason behind the choice of this title today. Hopefully with tonight's sharing, because it's recorded, it can help many of us, especially Buddhist devotees, to strengthen our faith and to develop a clear understanding of what is it like to be a true Buddhist devotee of Lord Buddha, to be worthy of him. Then just like what Brother Tay had mentioned just now, in fact, at the dinner time, I explained a bit as he also used it to share. It is very common practice for most Malaysian Chinese who call themselves Buddhists, but they don't have much understanding of what the Buddhist teaching is all about. So there are many who actually only go to the temple once a year. They call them the once-a-year Buddhist, on Vesak Day, or on Chinese New Year Day. Then they go to Kun Yam Myo, Chinese temple, make offering, then do some traditional thing. Apart from that, they don't have much understanding. Then just now, one of our colleagues, Kalyanamita, at the dinner table, she shared with us a very interesting thing. She said about 2-3 years ago when she just came to attend my Tuesday class, then she saw we all do the chanting, following the chanting book. Then he saw that book, Buddhist devotional, daily Buddhist devotional practice, written by our late Chief Reverend K. Sri Dhammananda, Dr. K. Sri Dhammananda. Then she asked, where can she get a copy? Oh, I said, you go Brickfield Temple, you can buy it. So she went there and inquired. Then she was given the book by the person who in charge of the, I think they call it the Buddhist library. There is a brother something, I forgot, he told me. Then that brother, Brother Uye, he asked her, are you a Dhamma practitioner? Because she wanted to buy the book. He said, no, I just attended a few lessons of the Dhamma sharing, and she just want to get hold of a copy to understand what she is told to chant, because the English translation are there. Then Brother Hui asked her one question. Do you know what is Noble Eightfold Path? He said, I heard of it before. They got a lot of right on eight right. Then the brother he said, oh, not bad. At least you know there are eight right path factor. there are a lot of people who come to this temple 20, 30 years. They don't even know what the Noble Eightfold Path is. See? That is the state of affair that can be happening, even at Brickfield Temple. So this is the true state of affair. If you are observant, if you are mindful, even you can check your own understanding and knowledge. If you yourself don't have that clear understanding, then how are you going to help people who are new, who wants to understand this teaching and give it a try? So these are all the very important reasons for this particular topic to be discussed today. And I hope to share some understanding that can make you all understand clearly. Apart from the once a year Buddhist, we got this traditional Buddhist, because born of a traditional Chinese family, normally you go to school or in your IC or in your birth cert, they ask you what religion you believe in, or Ugama, Malay, what is Ugama? So you got nothing, most of them free thinker, but they want to associate with the Buddhist teachings. I'm a Buddhist. That's how my birth cert got this Buddhist. My IC also got this Buddhist thing inside there. When we were young, our parents also don't understand. They put it in. So these are called traditional Buddhists who don't really have the understanding of what the teaching is. But because of our culture, most of the Chinese are Buddhists from China. Then the third category is slightly better. These are the ones that, like you all, go to temple, listen to Dhamma talk, read up, then exposed to a lot of so-called Buddhist teaching. Then my brother T.A. said, most of them are very knowledge-based, or more like commonly taught and accepted. But you check all this, is it capable of transforming the individual? Personality-wise, character-wise, so that you can become a true Buddhist in the sense that the Buddha man, Sakyamuni Buddha man, so that you can be a blessing to all. So this category, they are supposed to be the more knowledgeable type of Buddhist. But yet, like I explained earlier on, most of them still don't have much clear understanding of the true teaching. Most of them understood it as knowledge, more theoretical. And sometimes the knowledge also, they are not serious. They didn't really cultivate it until they develop a clear understanding. You ask them, they also not sure. Especially, what is the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of the Buddha's teaching. I remember everywhere I go, First Noble Truth. Ask them, what is the First Noble Truth? Life is suffering. Wow, that famous answer. Because they only know dukkha. And they don't understand what the Buddha meant by the First Noble Truth. The Buddha never said life is suffering. The Buddha said suffering is prevalent everywhere in this world. If you don't have the right understanding or wisdom when you confront these eight realities of life, this is the real First Noble Truth. Because the Buddha said there is a Noble Truth that explains to you clearly what suffering is. And there are eight conditions which are realities of life and existence. When you confront them without understanding through your delusion, you will grasp, cling and create suffering. And when suffering arises, you will be afflicted, tormented. But the Buddha never said life is suffering. He wants to explain to you the reality of life and existence, the prevalence of suffering, if you don't cultivate his teaching and develop the understanding so that you can have this clear understanding to confront this reality in life. So coming back to the question of today's title, how to be a true Buddhist devotee, we will have to inquire deep. If we really want to be a true Buddhist devotee, then we must find out who the Buddha is. Understand? That is the first thing you have to do. And now I ask you, how much do you know about the Buddha? Who is the Buddha? Is it the image that every time you pay respect? Is that image the Buddha? That is just a form, isn't it? That allow you to recall to mind who the Buddha is. So this understanding of who the Buddha is, you must already have. Otherwise, when you look at this form, you cannot recall to mind the great qualities of Lord Buddha. And who is he? And why is he so famous? So wise? So virtuous? All these are the teaching that the Buddha actually expounded 2,000 over years ago. But as Buddhists, we didn't find out. That's why when I came out to share, I realized I had to explain all this again. And now maybe we get somebody to respond. Explain to me, who is the Buddha? Who is the Buddha that you take refuge and pay respect? What is it? Son of a warrior. Is that the Buddha? Yeah. Enlightened one. Is that the Buddha? An arahant is an enlightened one. Different standard, correct? That's why you use the word too general. Enlightened one. The Buddha is the fully enlightened one. Understand? He is not only enlightened. He is perfect in his understanding of all the enlightenment possibility and gateway. That's why he is called the fully enlightened one. Sammasambuddha. He is not an ordinary Buddha. Sammasambuddha. Perfectly enlightened. Means what? Means what? Means at the time when he arrives, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born into the world. That's why when you chant in your normal Sunday service, your puja, salutation to the Triple Gem, Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. The first one is salutation to the Buddha. When you chant, do you understand its meaning? Iti peso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho. That's why to be a true devotee of the Buddha, or a true Buddhist devotee of the Buddha, you must understand who your teacher is, Anasana, how special he is, how virtuous and wise he is, and to have such a great being to be your teacher, your guide, you will have great respect and gratitude towards him. And later on, when you come to understand how wise he is because of his perfection that has taken such a long period, he used the wisdom way, Sakyamuni Buddha, 3¾ world cycle, Asankhya Kalpas, for him to perfect all his understanding and enlightenment to become a Sammasambuddha. That's why he has this special ability to summarize to you all of his understanding into just 4 noble truths. Very, very simple but very powerful truth that he called the 4 noble truths. Arya Satya. Arya are noble ones, enlightened ones, such as are true. And these truths are truths that can bring about transformation in the living being. When you penetrate and realize this noble truth, you can become noble ones or enlightened ones. That's why his teaching is very unique, very special. He's such a great being. And because of his great wisdom and understanding, he can bring forth to you this great teaching, which is so wonderful and so meaningful and so beautiful. So that when you cultivate it and develop the understanding of it, you can also awaken and become enlightened, just like him, but maybe not the same parity as a fully enlightened one. But at least there is a possibility of becoming enlightened, starting from the first stage of sainthood, Sotapan, then progressing into the second stage, which is Sakadagami, then Anagami and Arahant. Then after that, you undergo the Bodhisattva way, you can also continue with the cultivation. So all these are the great possibility of living beings, especially mankind, humanity. To realize your full potential, this is the teaching that can make a big difference to your life and that can transform you to such level of understanding that you can have this wisdom to live life, to live the noble life of an enlightened one, so that whatever that come or arise within life, you will be at peace all the time. You will have a lot of understanding, a lot of joy, a lot of peace, a lot of calmness, and you are very noble in all aspects of life. And nothing in this world can make you unhappy or miserable anymore. Suffering can never arise. And such a being with such a noble understanding and life is really a great blessing to all. And if you have gone through life, you will agree with me that you can have such understanding. You are the most beautiful living being and the most blessed living being ever to be born. Because such understanding and wisdom is very difficult to come by. For normal living being, even to have a moment of peace is very difficult because they don't understand how their mind behaves. They are so heedless throughout the day, they are hardly aware or mindful. Not only peace is difficult to come by, life is like so difficult to understand. Any condition can suddenly shift the whole understanding of life and can cause so much misery and affliction. So without this understanding of the Buddha's teaching, it is very, very difficult. So that's why as a true Buddhist, the first thing you need to know is you have a great teacher called the Sammasambuddha, fully enlightened, and he's the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. Then you have faith in him because his teaching can bring about great transformation, enlightenment in the here and now, freedom from all suffering. So to be able to have the condition to come into contact with the Dhamma is a great blessing. To be able to become a true Buddhist devotee, to have the condition to receive teaching, this teaching is a great blessing. That's why you have to thank your good karma for you to have such good condition. Then when you have such condition, if you don't know how to make use of it, to develop the understanding of it, then you wasted it. It will slip by. And this window, once it slipped by, it is going to be a long, long wait for each and every living being. So this is the reason why this topic is very important. So after you have understood who the Buddha is and how wonderful the teaching is,
your mind become different. Your faith and confidence in the Buddha and his teaching becomes very, very different. You become very stable. You have great faith in the Buddha and his teaching. And this is what Sadha is all about, the first spiritual faculty. Five of the first spiritual faculty that you need to understand his teaching to develop the cultivation of this Dhamma to move into the practice. Once Sadha is developed, the second spiritual faculty will follow. Second spiritual faculty is Virya. Virya is a spiritual zeal or tenacity to walk this way, to learn this teaching. Because you understand the greatness of his teaching, the uniqueness of his teaching. The Buddha is so wise, he can summarize to you all of life, mundane and supramundane. So much so that when you understand his teaching, you like understand the secret of life, and you know how to live life, and you don't have to suffer anymore. You don't have to worry about life, become afflicted through whatever that arises within life itself. Every moment, every instant, you are so peaceful, so mindful, so heedful, so peaceful, so blessed and so calm. And there is so much joy and understanding within you. And as an enlightened being, you are called a noble one because you are very noble in all aspects of life. Very noble in the understanding of all the nature's law that governs life and existence. And you have all the noble action, speech and thought process. You know how to arise the right, appropriate right thought, communicate or speak the right, appropriate right speech. Then act beautifully. Act sincerely, act wisely, appropriately, so that all of your actions are appropriate, right action. Then the way you live your life, you follow this Dhamma, which has the clear understanding of life. You are incapable of evil, negativity. You understand clearly the law of karma. You will never violate this law. Then you meditate and develop clear understanding of who you are, what you are, and what this mind is all about, and what it is capable of. Then you also develop the clear understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence, which the Buddha called the truth, nature's truth or Dhamma. With all this understanding, you will become different. Your character, your personality, your demeanor, the way you understand life and live life, you become very different because you are so noble in all aspects of life. You're not only noble in your understanding of life, you are very noble in the way you communicate and speak with people. There is only wholesomeness, no negativity. And you understand what blessings are, what merits are, and you know how to develop them. Even your speech are very eloquent, very gentle, very kind, very pleasant. Brings about a lot of understanding, harmony and love. No negativity. Then all of your actions are so beautiful, appropriate and meaningful. Then your thoughts are so beautiful. Not only the four Brahma Vihara that Brother Ken want me to talk about. All of the other right thoughts are very important. Thought of contentment, generosity, humility. These are all source of great blessing. Then thought of respect, gratitude towards others who have helped you in whatever way. Then the kind thought of rejoicing with whatever wholesomeness that has arisen. So all this will transform you character-wise, personality-wise, so that you can be a very, very different living being. And everybody who come to know you can feel you, can understand you, and they will develop the interest to understand what you have understood. And there is so much love and compassion within your nature. So these are all the beautiful possibility when you cultivate the Buddha Dhamma and his teaching. So that virya will arise, spiritual zeal and tenacity to go this way, to cultivate this understanding, because it can make so much difference to your life. Then why are you procrastinating, waiting for? Haven't you suffered enough over the years? Haven't those heedless moments torment you enough? Do you want to continue with your old heedless way of living life, constantly worrying about life, so much so that you never really leave? So having developed these two spiritual faculty, the virya, which is a spiritual zeal, the second spiritual faculty, will drive you to cultivate the third spiritual faculty, which the Buddha mentioned as sati, or mindfulness, leading to the heedfulness. And this is the most important, because within the whole teaching, you check. Dhammapada verse 21, the Buddha mentioned very clearly. He says, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, the heedless are as if dead. So to be a true Buddhist, you need to understand this message. You need to strive on with heedfulness to cultivate this quality of mind that the Buddha called heedfulness. And this one we have dealt with in the last talk. Yeah? So this is Dhammapada verse 23. Yeah? 21. Yeah? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. The first part. Whereas if you are heedless, you are as if dead. Spiritually, you are as if dead. There is no possibility of enlightenment. Your window to become enlightened is closed because you don't understand what heedfulness is, and you never strive on to cultivate this quality of mind. So heedfulness consists of two parts. First part is you have to be ever mindful. Then use this trained mind that is ever mindful to constantly meditate or cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, the fourth noble truth. Because according to the Buddha, if you have any suffering, he said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And that is what meditation is about, to develop the wisdom to liberate your mind, to be free from all suffering. So, this very important understanding of heedfulness is key to your cultivation. That's why you are determined to follow the advice of the Buddha. And the advice of the Buddha is Dhammapada verse 183, based on his understanding of the nature's law that governs life and existence, the law of karma. That's why the Buddha asks you to reflect and contemplate every day, the five daily contemplation. This is to develop the initial wisdom to confront the first noble truth, eight types of realities. Then the last contemplation is to remind you that there is such a law that governs life and existence called law of karma, karma niyama. The Buddha explain very clearly under that fifth contemplation. That's why you have to reflect, contemplate every day. All living beings, not only human beings, even the non-humans, the devas, all living beings, including the animals, they are all born of their karma, heir to their karma, conditioned and supported by their karma. And they are what they are because of their karma. So because of that, the Buddha said, when you understand this important law of karma, and when you understand that all of your life, or each and every individual's life, depends so much on karma, because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned, supported by it, and you are what you are every moment, every instant, because of that karma. So what must you do? Huh? What must you do? You have to take care of that karma. How you take care of that karma? You have to train your mind to be heedful, to be aware, so that you can develop the ability to avoid all ill. So that you can see your mental intention behind all of your actions, speech and thought process, and the way you live your life, which is the Noble Eightfold Path factors of right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. If you are not mindful and heedful, you cannot cultivate all this. Then, before you can even develop this ability to look at your mental intention, you must understand what constitutes evil. Like the Buddha said, you have to avoid all evil under Dhammapada verse 183. Because when you avoid all evil, you are able to prevent your negative karma from arising. That's why under the Dhammapada verse 183, he used the word very specific, sabba papasa akaranam. Sabba is all. Papasa is evil. Akaranam. All evil you must avoid. He never just said avoid evil. No. His advice is avoid all evil, and that is out of love and compassion for living beings. For your own good, you better heed his advice. Otherwise, when the law of karma hit back, you don't blame anybody because you are born of it, heir to it, conditioned, supported by it, and you are what you are every moment, every instant because of that law of karma. So this understanding is so important. Then you reflect on his teaching. Why every puja, when we come, after we pay respect, develop the spiritual faculty or sadha virya, then pay respect mindfully, so develop sati, then we start to chant the salutation. We are these are all meritorious action. Then after that, we take refuge. Why do we take refuge? As a true priest, refuge is most important. That's why you must find out why the Buddha wants us all to take refuge with the Triple Gem, Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. Then after that, you renew your five precepts. Why do you renew your five precepts? Why must you keep your precepts? That's why all this understanding you must understand, find out, investigate, contemplate, reflect, then develop the clear understanding. What are precepts? We check. First precept, Panatipata Virabhani Sikha Padang Samadhi Yami, like what we chant just now. What does it mean? We undertake the training rule. Remember, the word is the training rule to abstain from killing and causing harm to fellow living beings. What is that training rule? The heedfulness, the mindfulness, understand, to see clearly your mental intention. When there is intention to cause harm or kill, you must be aware. Then because you undertake the training rule, you must exercise restraint. You must not do it. Otherwise, it brings about downfall, negative karma. And who are the people who kill and harm? You investigate further. Then you realize, this is how the Buddha teach, and the teaching are all connected. Only evil people are capable of killing and causing harm. And what constitutes evil? Selfish people. Emotional, violent, angry people. Greed and hatred. Then deluded people. Last is the third precept. So you realize all those who violate this precept, they are either selfish, greedy, possessive, lustful, or emotionally very unstable, very violent. Then a lot of envy, jealousy, hatred. They have very strong views and ideas about things. and through their possessiveness, aggressiveness, violence, envy and jealousy, they are capable of a lot of evil things, because these are all evil roots, roots of all evil, make you very evil. Then the last one is your fear, worry, anxiety, your insecurity, which is your delusion, because you don't understand. You don't understand the nature's law that governs life and existence. Out of fear, you actually create more evil. You become more violent, more cunning, more deceitful. You want to take advantage of people. You want to cheat and deceive people where you think this is good for you. That's why that greed will drive you and make you evil. That's why you are capable of scheming, planning to kill, and even go to the extent of committing all those evil deeds, misappropriate and all those things. That's why the five precepts, you have to uphold, keep them, because they are the source of all evil. That's why the Buddha laid down for you to make it easy for you to cultivate. So to avoid all evil, you keep your five precepts. But avoiding evil is not enough, the Buddha said. That only prevents your negative karma, but you need to have merits, wholesomeness, goodness, kindness, virtue, and also blessing to support your life, to bring about a good condition for good life. So he introduced the 10 meritorious action that you can do every time you come to the temple or away place where you develop the puja, pre and post, then you listen to Dhamma, you straighten your view. All of the 10 meritorious actions, you would have done them. First, you pay respect. Reverential salutation is a meritorious action. Then, if you know how to radiate metta, make offering to the Triple Gem. Again, generosity, dana, that is meritorious action. Then you renew your precept. Keeping your precept is a meritorious action. Then you meditate, bhavana, is a meritorious action. Then you rejoice with the wholesomeness, or one has a reason. Yeah. That's why you sadhu, is a meritorious action. Then listening to the Dhamma, developing the understanding to straighten your view, this is also meritorious action. Then end of the session, you transfer merit, share merits. All these are meritorious action. Then you help out in temple activity and facility so that you can support the Buddha Dhamma, so that the Buddha Sasana can flourish. All these are meritorious action. Then you develop the understanding of the Mangala Sutta, the 38 blessings. Make sure you have them, so that your life can be very beautiful, very meaningful. With all the merits and blessings, you will be very, very blessed with all this inheritance that comes through nature's law. That's how great cultivator has all this possibility of good merits and blessing to support them, to protect them, to make a great difference to their life. So now we have understood the key important thing that a true Buddhist devotee must do. Then we have to move on. After avoiding all evil through keeping the precept, we have to cultivate wholesomeness. That's why you have to develop the ennoblers of precept. Not only you don't kill, you must develop the ennobler. Killing is an evil act. So the ennobler of killing is what? To be compassionate. Understand? That's how you develop compassion, to help people, to relieve suffering in this world. That's what Tsuji, they all do a lot. Your temple also sometimes help to raise fund and help out the all flood victim and all those nature disasters victim. So these are the things that we can do when we have the Dhamma, when we have the understanding. Then after we have developed all this, we must understand what constitutes wholesomeness. The opposite of the three evil roots is what? The three wholesome roots of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. To develop the ability to have non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion, you must purify your mind, the Buddha said. You must develop the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. Train your mind to be silent, to be aware, to be heedful, so that you can insight into the universal characteristics of all phenomena, impermanent, leading to the clear understanding of what suffering is, so that you are incapable of self-delusion, so that you will see clearly the non-self nature of all phenomena, including your five aggregate of form and mind, and the empty nature of life and existence. And you will not deludedly grasp, cling, and hold on to so many things within the phenomenal world of consciousness. You will have clarity of mind, clear understanding through your heedfulness training. The mind that is heedful has clarity, can understand many things. So training the mind to be heedful is very important. Then you check the Buddha's teaching, how to be heedful. The Buddha asked a question, why are you not peaceful, not mindful, incapable of heedfulness? It's because he said you have the five mental hindrance. The mental hindrance. Lust, thought, we dealt with it. And what are the five mental hindrance of mind? Living beings who are heedless, who don't have the Dhamma understanding, who never train their mind, they are most of the time throughout the day heedless. They think a lot. They got a lot of wrong view, a lot of habitual tendency. They react to everything they see, they hear, they smell, they taste, they think, they feel anything. And their thoughts are so heedlessly doing all those habitual things, habitual tendency, reacting to sense experience, stirring the mind, creating all the duality, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. Then every time you stir your mind, you develop the evil roots, you develop the hindrance, you become restless, you don't have peace. Every moment of sense experience, like and dislike, sensual desire, you will keep on arising until it becomes a habitual tendency. Everything you see, also you react. Positive or negative craving. You are never in the middle path. You don't have wisdom, you don't have equanimity. You cannot see things as they are and accept them for what they are. You are always drawn into like and dislike. And what is like and dislike? These are the sensual desire and ill will, the first two hindrance of mind that will hinder you from becoming peaceful, from entering the meditative peace, a meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness and inner awareness, which is to be heedful. And when you understand that these five hindrances are so powerful, you must quickly determine to train your mind so that these hindrances will not arise anymore in the future. And how to do that? The teaching is very clear, isn't it? When you understand that these are the hindrance that hinders you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness, then the Buddha said, don't fight it, don't suppress it, don't control it. Just be aware, acknowledge it, and understand how they arise through your wrong view. Then straighten your view. Then develop the opposite five spiritual faculties. because these are spiritual faculty that can counter the hindrance, the opposite mind. That's why the opposite mind is Sadha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya, which we have already started the cultivation when we start to reflect and contemplate who the Buddha is and how special he is and what is his teaching. Then when we train our mind through all the various meditation techniques, like mind sweeping method to decondition your heedless thinking, combine with metta to develop the inner well-being in you so that you have positive energy, so that there is no more negative energy or vibration, so that your fear, worry, anxiety that condition your restlessness of mind, which is another hindrance of mind, will not be there. Then when you understand the importance of this teaching, you will not be sleepy. The third hindrance of mind, sloth and torpor, will not arise. Your spiritual zeal, tenacity to walk this way will drive you on. Then your doubt, no more, because you have witnessed how your life can transform and how you can develop the understanding to improve your life so that you can be a true blessing to all of humanity. Then after that, you have to understand the significance of all your puja cultivation. Puja is your spiritual devotional practice, and you must develop a religious routine daily to help you cultivate throughout the day, because heedfulness is to be cultivated in the midst of life throughout the day, daily mindfulness. If you are only heedful when you are at a retreat, the moment you come out, you're heedless again. Then that training is not going to free you. Even you read Ajahn Chah's teaching, I send out through the WhatsApp and the email, Tujuputola, you can read. Ajahn Chah teaches the same, you need mindfulness, you have to be ever mindful, he used the word. Then you have to wash the mind non-stop with the silent mind. He used the word, the one who knows. But actually there is no one who knows, it's just the awareness, the sti, the silent mind. They use different words, but they understand what that word is, then it's okay. So all these are important understanding. The Buddhist devotional practice or the puja that you go through is to refresh you and remind you of what the teaching is all about, what the Dhamma is all about, what the Sangha is all about, and what the Buddha is all about. Then how to actually cultivate the very important understanding of the essential Dhamma of the Buddha. The first one is to pay respect, chant the salutation, so that you can develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then after that, take refuge. Well, taking refuge is very important. It's stated in the Dhammapada. There is no refuge safe in this universe except in the triple gem. And what are the triple gem? They are the Buddha, the Dhamma and the Sangha. Who is the Buddha? Fully enlightened one. He sure has the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the teaching of the Buddha. That's why the second refuge also has the Dhamma. Then the third refuge, the Sangha, the Aryan Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. They definitely have the Dhamma because they are enlightened. So these are the only refuge that you can find the teaching, the essence of his teaching, which is the Four Noble Truths. And this is the one that can transform you and make you enlightened one or noble ones. That's why you have to take refuge. Taking refuge, the meaning is very deep. When you determine through your understanding, that's why when you chant, you don't like parroting, you know, as parroting, Buddhang saranang gacchami, no understanding and no feeling, like that. You like kindergarten, learn how to sing song. It doesn't benefit you. But when you understand the significance of taking refuge, you will chant differently. Buddhang saranang gacchami means you feel it. I go to the Buddha for refuge, where the Buddha is a fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. and he is such a great being. So if I take refuge with the Buddha, means I create affinity with the Buddha, so that the Buddha nature can support this form in mind every time it comes, because there is this faith in him. And when you have faith in something, your mind becomes very calm, very composed. And that is the spiritual faculty that can drive you to understand his teaching. Because you have faith in this teacher, you have great respect and gratitude for him, and you will listen to his word attentively with the faith. That's why it's very different. And this is how spiritual faculty, when it accumulate into spiritual powers called balas, they become unshakable. And it will be with you all the time. That's why you become like very easy to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. Because spiritual faculty are faculties of mind that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching, that can allow you to penetrate the spiritual understanding of his teaching. That's why you must cultivate. And once you have the spiritual faculty, the hindrance ceases to be. That's why all his teaching you have to understand. Then after that, you train your mind to stabilize your mindfulness. You can use any method or technique or skillful means. The Buddha recommended under Satipatthana, the first category of cultivation under Kayanupassana, Anapanasati, mindfulness of in and out breath. If you got no object of meditation, you train your mind to develop mindfulness of your in and out breath, because the breath always within the present moment is always with you. When you are mindful of the in and out breath, you are with the moment without thought. That's why you are peaceful, you are calm. That awareness will develop the silent mind. And when the mind is silent, piti will arise. The spiritual faculty of piti, which is spiritual joy, spiritual calmness, they will arise, or spiritual rapture. So this is how you train. Then after anapanasati develop, you can stabilize this mindfulness. Then use it to cultivate the four posture, mindfulness of your four posture throughout the day in the midst of life. Then from there you move on to your sati sampajana, which is daily mindfulness. And this is how you cultivate. Then only you can move on to the four elements, the 32 part, the 9 stages of cemetery decomposition. And then you finish the first foundation. Then only you move to the second foundation of Vedana Nupassana. Then the third foundation, which is Chitta Nupassana. Then finally, Dhamma Nupassana, where you awaken. So these are all the essential teaching. And when you are able to decondition the heedless thinking, your mind becomes very calm, very peaceful, silent, just aware. That's why you develop inner peace. Then when you develop metta, you develop inner well-being. And the benefits of meditation is tremendous. When you meditate and train your mind is no longer heedless, restless, having all those negative tendencies of fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. And throughout the day, while you hold on to all your greed, your hatred, your envy, your jealousy, your fear, your insecurity, your phobia, your like and dislike, and you worry about so many things in life, you worry about your health, your loved one, your financial situation, your career, your reputation, your wealth, your business, even your own dog or your pet also you worry. Sometimes you travel without peace, who is going to look after my dog? See? You develop so much attachment to things. Then you worry about this, worry about that, so much so you never live life. Well, you are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life, you never leave. And you never leave it because you don't know this teaching. You don't know how to silence your mind. You don't know how to train your mind to be with the moment in peaceful, silent moment to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life that arise moment to moment in life. When you don't have thought, you are not heedless, you are peaceful, you are silent, you have clarity. And you can develop the clear understanding of life. You can see things as they are. And you can insight into phenomena, and you are no longer deluded by what the form and mind tell you. you are no longer deceived by what the phenomenal world of consciousness tell you. Then you become very different. You can use it to live life and be with the moment to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life. You can live the life of an enlightened one. You can have a lot of inner peace, inner well-being, inner joy and happiness. And life can be so meaningful, so beautiful. You are so heedful and thankful. You have such noble qualities as opposed to a heedless one, a deluded one. One that doesn't have that Buddha-dhamma. So there is a big difference between calling yourself a Buddhist and developing the understanding to be a true Buddhist, devotee of Lord Buddha. With all this understanding, you will become very different in no time, I tell you, when you determine to walk this way, to cultivate your mind, where it can transform you and make such a great difference to your life. Then why are you waiting for? Why are you still heedlessly wasting your time in this world? Having to toy with life, having to go through all the suffering and misery of life. You don't have the understanding and wisdom to confront life when you are hit by the realities of life. Birth, old age, sickness and death, you cannot cope. Then as you grow older, worse still, old age, sickness and death can be very traumatic. Then separation from loved ones also same. These are the first noble truth reality. Separation from those things that you hold on to dearly, like your loved ones, your possession, your wealth, your career, your reputation, your wealth, and all those things that you hold on to dearly. Even your idea, your thought, your views, your opinion, your religious label. All these are attachment born of delusion. So there is this great fear of losing them, separation. And that can bring about tremendous suffering. That's why people can become very sorrowful, so sad and so miserable until they become depressed, they enter depression. Then that fear, that cocoon of thought, that unhappiness, keep on arising. That's how it developed into depression. There are a lot of depressed person around. Nowadays, even very young people has depression. Yeah, you will be very surprised. And sometimes girlfriend problem, boyfriend problem, separation, divorce problem. So all this can bring about great suffering when you are with people whom you don't like, when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when your expectations in life are not met. All this can bring about great suffering. Then the Buddha, like what I explained just now, his teaching is so simple but so beautiful, and you have to be very blessed to receive this teaching. But living being is very funny. When it's given free, they do not cherish it, they do not value it, they just ignore it. And I can tell you, if you do that, means you are really, really deluded. Who will ever do that? If there is something that can explain to me the secret of life and explain to me clearly what life is all about, so that when I understand, I know how to live life. And I understand all of the mundane and supramundane aspect of life, I will never, never throw it away. I will have great gratitude towards the Buddha, and I will really determine all out, strike on with heedfulness to train my mind to understand this teaching so that it can transform this form and mind, this nature, radically, character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise, then develop all the noble qualities of a great living being, of a true Buddhist. This is what the teaching is all about. And you cannot see the importance of this. It is your karma, too bad. Because when the condition is there, and you are not serious about life, you are not attentive, and you don't go back and reflect and contemplate, that this window is the best because the Buddha's asana is still around. You are born a human being, and you are born a Buddhist with a condition to come into contact with this teaching, and you can be a true Buddhist devotee of Sakyamuni Buddha, and you don't make full use of this window or opportunity, then it is your choice because your life, you decide how you want to live, but don't regret it and lament. In future, when you understand, you will see the importance of what I am trying to share with you. So these are the very important understanding of the Buddha's teaching. The Four Noble Truths, the reason why I call it the secret of life is because it can explain to us all of the mundane and supramundane aspect of life. The First Noble Truth talks about life, the reality of life and existence. Nothing is apart from the eight realities of life and existence. You can go and check. Everything you do in life, nothing is apart from that. Because as a human being, living being, you need to live life. And to live life, you need to interact with fellow living beings. Not only human beings, living beings. The non-human too, the animals too. And you have to interact with nature, understand? That's why man and nature must have harmony. There must be clear understanding. There must be wisdom. There are nature's law that governs life and existence. And the Buddha very clearly explained the five great laws of nature, Pancha Niyama, that governs all of life and existence. Uttu Niyama, Bija Niyama. The first two are physical law and biological order of nature. And these are scientific law. The scientists, when they understand this nature's law, they progress very fast. That's why science and technology progress very fast. That's why we are experiencing them over the last 30-40 years. Similarly, the Buddha understood the other three spiritual law, the great law of karma, karma niyama, the law of the mind, citta niyama, and the law of truth, dhamma niyama. So these three spiritual law are the three important right views that living beings need to develop the understanding. When you understand them, you understand the nature's law that governs life and existence, then you live in accordance with this law. You will reap the fruit of it. The great benefit of developing the understanding to accord, flow, and benefit from all this understanding so that you will not violate all this nature's law, so that you will not be capable of any evil that can bring about downfall to your karma, so that your spiritual nature can be beautifully developed, so that in future you have to come, be reborn as living being, or you choose to come, you are bodhisattva, you will have beautiful karmic inheritance and spiritual inheritance. You will inherit all of your cultivation, your wisdom, your virtue, your whatever beautiful qualities, then your blessing, your merits, they will be your inheritance. And life to you will be beautiful, very different. No more like before, through heedlessness and delusion, getting yourself entangled with life, causing so much karmic negativity, so that every life you come, you have to pay back all this karmic debt. Like an unending. Sometimes you have to pay back to your spouse too. So your previous life, past life, you did so much negative thing to your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your wife. You never really, really respect them or appreciate what they have done for you. You are so selfish, so egoic, so lustful. You do what you like. Through that neglect, you cause so much suffering to others. Then you ruin your life. So in future, you come back, you become victim. People dump you, divorce you, make you miserable. That's how you pay back your debt. Then you complain. Why is God so unfair? At that time, you think of God, you don't think of Lord Buddha.
You blame God very easy. Why is God so unfair? If there is a God, there is no more suffering. Understand? But because God also subject to nature's law, they are not free from nature's law. That's why understanding life is very different. So the Buddha, under the Four Noble Truths, he summarized to you all of life. The first two is mundane. First Noble Truth talk about the Noble Truth of suffering, the eight conditions that can lead to affliction, suffering, the realities of life and existence. And that one covers all of the mundane life. Then the second Noble Truth expanded on the first Noble Truth. He said, whatever suffering that arises, there is a cause behind. And the cause is always craving, born of your self-delusion. So when you know what suffering is and the cause behind the suffering, you will know how to manage your life, isn't it? That's why as a true Buddhist, you've got no problem. You know how to attend to it. And you know how to train your mind to develop the understanding to overcome them so that you can stand above all this vicissitude of life, so that you can transcend all these mundane dualities of life. Then the Buddha not only mentioned the first Noble Truth or proclaimed the first and second Noble Truth, he went on to tell you the third Noble Truth, which is the most beautiful, he said. He said, in this world, suffering need not be, because there is a third Noble Truth that explained to you clearly the cessation of suffering is possible. Enlightenment in the here and the now, you can realize this Nibbana, which is the cessation of all suffering before you die. That's why this third Noble Truth gives you a lot of hope, a lot of understanding. If suffering need not be, this teaching is so beautiful. And if I can realize this state of enlightenment and liberate my mind to transform this so-called coming nature into something so beautiful, so meaningful, so that this form of mind, this so-called human being, with the wisdom, will know how to live life, is no longer deluded, then this human being, or fire aggregate, or form of mind, which is not you, will not be deceived anymore. Because with their understanding and wisdom, nothing will delude it. Nothing can cause it to become miserable and deluded again. It will not grasp and cling and attach like before. There will be no more craving. Thing is just the way it is. Condition arising, cause of phenomena, impermanent, leading to suffering. When I want thing my way, which is not nature's way, suffering will arise. That's why embracing the reality, oneness, or what is, or suchness is very important. We share this understanding, you remember? The meaning of suchness, the isness of thing, what is. So all this understanding can come about. Then not only he tell you enlightenment is possible, the Buddha continued with the fourth Noble Truth. He said there is a Noble Truth, the fourth Noble Truth, that talk about the path that lead to the end of all suffering. You cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha, it will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why it not only tells you it's possible, it can even teach you how to do it. But Noble Eightfold Path is not easy. That one you need to put in a lot of hard work, a lot of reflection, contemplation, and patience and diligence and faith to cultivate it. Then when you have that condition and ability to penetrate that teaching, I rejoice with you, and you are the most beautiful being ever to arise. So this is how the Buddha's teaching is, or what the Buddha's teaching is all about. So the third Noble Truth is about enlightenment in the here and the now, and this is a supramundane understanding of life. That's why I say his Four Noble Truths, he can summarize to you all of life, both the mundane and the supramundane aspect, the unconditioned and the conditioned world.
And the penetrative understanding is so unique. It's only the Buddhist teaching that has this teaching thus far, as far as I can know or understand. There are other great teachers who also have that understanding, but they came back to the same understanding as what Lord Buddha came to realize. That's why you start to see now modern teachers teach using all this word, accepting what is, embracing the challenges of what is. They're even like J. Krishnamurti. He also talked about the isness of things, what is. Then he also talked about the silent mind, the awareness, the heedfulness. Some of them use different words, like Eckhart Tolle, he said the power of now. Actually, it's just be with the moment, in sati, without thought. That's why he saw the beauty of having this ability to stay within the present moment. That's why the power of now, this moment. What are you doing? Are you peaceful? Why are you not peaceful? That's why you have to inquire. Then, what did the Buddha said? What the teaching said? Then you find out. You hold the key to your own life destiny, Karana. To be happy or to be miserable is entirely your choice. So choose wisely. Why do you choose to be miserable? Why do you choose to have so much suffering and misery and affliction? Because you choose to be heedless. You never heed the advice of the Buddha to be heedful. You never put in real effort to train your mind to be ever mindful, to cultivate this noble aroma. And that is the thin line that separates you from becoming enlightened. The heedless are as if dead. You fall into that category. Whereas the heedful never die. Means destined for enlightenment. And the choice is so simple. Choose to be heedful. Is it so difficult? Yeah? Just to train your mind to be ever mindful. Then develop the daily mindfulness. Then the four foundation of mindfulness confirmed to you maximum 7 years. Not that long. The fastest 7 days people can do it. Even in the sutta, there are two arahant, 7 years old. Put us to shame. 7 years old become an arahant. The two, I remember the name now. Samanera Pandita and Samanera Sumana. Very near to Susan's name. Sumana. So these two, they have their special paths. That's why one of them, I think Samanera Pandita, he was, I think 7 years old only. He followed Thera Sariputta. He was a knowing monk. Then he became a knowing monk for only a week. Then on the 8th day, and I tell you this story, very interesting, so that you have faith it can be done. 7 years old, Samanera also can do it. Oh, you're so old. But they say, the old horse, very difficult to change their character. The young one easier, because they are not so conditioned. So what happened was, on the 8th day morning, he was following Sariputta, going on arms round. Then he observed, because he was very mindful, even at the age of 7 years old. He saw the farmer. They know how to develop the irrigation of their farming, the crops. Then he asked Sariputta, is it? Thera Sariputta, is it? Water is without consciousness, and yet the farmer know how to direct them and make use of them to help them in their crops and farming. Sariputta said, yes, that's why they are in a way very skillful, very wise. They know how to use all this and direct them for appropriate purpose. Then he had joy. Then he moved on. Then he saw those people. I think they are hunters. He saw them with the arrow. Then he saw some of these arrows, they dry up already. Bend. Then they know how to actually straighten it. Warm it up. Then after that, straighten it. Then he said to Sariputta, this bamboo, crooked bamboo, without consciousness, but these people who are skilled in this, they can straighten it so that this arrow, when they shoot, it can flash. Means it can actually serve them well. It can go the direction they want it to be. Then again, Sariputta said, yes, this is what nature is all about. If you understand, you can use it. Then there is another third incident where he passed by, he saw all these carpenters. He saw the various type of timber. Actually, it's like a log, laid two ways. But this carpenter is so skillful, they can remove the bark, trim, plane, then shape it and make into block art, wheels, furniture and all those things. He said, the wood are also without consciousness and yet they know how to direct it and use it for so many things. Then again, Sariputta told this Novik monk, yeah, he said, that's why you must know how to use things. Then this Novik monk suddenly dawned upon him, I had a mind with a consciousness, and yet I don't know how to direct it, train it, and make it peaceful. The one without consciousness also, they can train, direct, and use it so beautifully. I must be very stupid, is it? Then he seek permission from Sariputta. I do not want to waste time. Can I seek permission to go back to my kuti, to develop this understanding, to train my mind? And he went back. That's why on the 8th day, half a day before lunch, before the dawn, he became anagami, that's Samanera Pandita. And Sakyamuni Buddha got this special ability, he can see. I think King Saka also knew, that's why the news traveled to him. The Deva must have come and tell him. Then through his supernormal power, he knew that this Samanera Pandita is going to be an arahant soon. But at that moment, he saw Sariputta bringing food to this Samanera Pandita. He liked him so much, because he knew this small boy, very wise. And the Buddha knew if he go in and disturb him, that condition will slip off and it will take him quite a while to develop it. So the Buddha manifests in front of Sariputta and stop him and talk to him. Then, not long, the Samanara Pandita become arahant, came out. Then Sakyamuni Buddha said, ah, now you can go in and see him and serve him. He is already an arahant. And he is so wise at that age. 8 days only became arahant. Half a day became anagami. You better go and see how the farmer irrigate, how the people make the arrow, and how the carpenter make all these things. Then see whether you have this insight.
He has a condition. Huh?
Yeah, that's why he did a lot of homework. So when are you going to start? No, when are you going to start? That is more important, that question. If you think small boy has the condition, means he started early. But if he's still, oh, he has the condition. Means what? Like in our society, the difference between a successful person and a unsuccessful person, you know what is it? They have studied. They say there are two mind states are very different. If you go to one who is got potential to be successful, you go and explain to him, I say, actually you're wasting your time. If you really develop the understanding of investment or business or whatnot, then you do it. You will make your money. This successful person will listen attentively, then tell himself, yeah, I got nothing to lose because at the moment I am very poor. I'm not successful. Why not I give it a try? But the guy who is destined not to be successful, you know what he say, you know? Forget about it lah. Not for me lah. I very can. He tell you like that. He didn't even want to listen and try. He just tell you, not for me. Because he say, his karma not so good. He say, his mia not so good. You think like that, forever you won't be successful. Because you never give yourself a chance. You always, through that conditioning, that wrong view, react the same way. Even a real friend or good advisor, good knowing advisor come and give you the advice. You also, through your wrong view, your stubbornness, your heedlessness, miss it. That's what life is all about. When there is condition, seize upon it. Like the Buddha knew, if Sariputta go in, the Samanera will be stuck at Anagami for a while. But one more life, don't have to come back to the sensual realm. The non-returner, pure airport, also become Arahant. But it will take a long time. So if there is condition for immediate release, why not? That's why Sakyamuni Buddha, he knew. And he just manifest. So now it's almost 2 minutes past 10. I have to stop my talk. I think this is what I will share with you all. With this, I think it's enough. It has already enough Dhamma for you to digest and to slowly, slowly develop the understanding and then cultivate. I thank you for your patience. So I will end my talk now. Thank you so much. If you got any question, you can ask.
Any question from the floor? Buddhism understand one particular Buddhist text or whatever correctly, and there will be many interpretations, right? That depend, like what you say, you know, I think it's sometimes due to the wisdom door. If you have your wisdom door open, right, then you will see it differently. Many will still get caught in a particular stage, and just like what you just said, you know, if he misses it, and they say,
yeah. So thank you so much for your sharing. Huh? You got any question? Any particular question? Because this was what he feel and he want to share, which is quite good. Because different people are different and not everybody can develop the same understanding. But there is one thing that living beings need to be understand. Truth is, understand what? Truth is means what? Not your truth, not my truth. Because truth is not relative, understand what? Truth is whatever that can explain the way things are. That is the truth. That's why the scientists know when they want to establish certain theory, they will actually put it to test. they call it hypothesis. Then after they confirm, it becomes theory. Then they put the theory to test. Oh, that's how they confirm it. So truth is even more profound than scientific law, because truth is about reality. So when the Buddha shares the teaching, which is the noble truth, it points towards the same reality, like the Nibbana. That word Nibbana is not Nibbana. But when it's been realized, each and every living being that realize what that is, they will know what that is, no different. Like you taste sugar, the sweetness of sugar, we can use word to describe and argue, but that sweetness is only one taste, understand? If you taste before, you will know what the thing is. One cup of coffee or tea, you put 2 teaspoons or 1 teaspoon, then that sweetness of that sugar is that particular type of consciousness. The person who has tasted it and realized it will know, but he will use word to describe it differently, because he, if he's an art graduate, he will describe it from the point of view of an art student. If he's a technical guy, he will describe it from a technical point of view. That's why different people can understand things and explain it differently. But if they had the same realization, they will know what that thing is. So it's not a question of whether some understand like that, some understand like that, and some don't understand. Because if they have not realized, this thing will arise, like you mentioned. Yeah. But once they realize, it is the same. They can use different language, different words. It's just like in our society. We call a car, English word car, Malay word kereta, Mandarin word ter, but they point towards the same object or entity, understand or not? But appear different because different language, different description. So truth is in a way quite similar. You can use different words to point towards the truth. The Christian call it the kingdom of God. The Buddha call it Nibbana, or the Buddha nature, or the true nature, or the oneness nature. Then the Hindu call it Atman. And now I remember the word Upanishad, the Hindu teaching. That day somebody asked me, I forgot about the name. It's called Upanishad. It's a very famous Bhagavad Gita and Upanishad, their teaching. They believe in the ultimate supreme true self, super Atman. And the Tao is called the Tao. So different religion give different name to that particular enlightenment state. Then some call it the source. And the Mahayana call it the original nature, the true nature, or the Buddha nature. So different names appear because living being described it with words, concept, and ideology. Definitely, because before the realization, there will be different description and commentaries. But when they realize, they can use different word. So this is what I'm trying to point to. They are describing the same thing, and you can never run, because that thing is the truth. Definitely, definitely. Many years. And this nun is coming over to give some talk in Malaysia for about 10 days. I think quite a number of centers has invited her. And this one was chanced upon by Sister Joyce. So Sister Joyce has requested me to allow her to have a talk at the Sunday Wu Ping Ching Se during one of my sessions. Then this coming Tuesday class also, she will be at my house. If you are free, you want to come, you are most welcome. So these are the conditions that has arisen. So when there is condition for you to listen to the Dhamma, it constitutes supreme blessing. Then when you straighten your view, it's also a meritorious action. Then when you have the condition, if it can bring about special condition for things to happen, you will never know. Just like the Samanera Pandita. He just follows Sariputta, Tera Sariputta for a walk. Then he chants upon all these things. That's why when you listen attentively, your nature can be different. Then you will suddenly like click, then you understand. Yeah. How come people can do, I cannot do? Then you have faith and confidence in yourself. Whatever people can develop, if I put in the necessary faith, perseverance, and diligence, this nature can also develop. Or you are positive that way, then the faith will drive you. Your virya will drive you. Or then there is possibility of things happening. So this is something maybe you would like to reflect on, contemplate on, so that it can stay with you. To maybe remind you of this possibility, so that you don't allow your heedlessness and what they call laziness continue to make you heedless. Otherwise you will always say, "Aiya, never mind lah, not free, I got a dinner appointment, I got one appointment." And when you are not serious about life, you will have a lot of justification and reason. But when you are serious about life, this thing inside will move you, your spiritual faculty will move you. That's why it's very different. When I started in the year 1971, I got no problem in life. I got nobody to motivate me or ask me to learn this teaching. All of a sudden, this one understood the importance of it, because I saw the Four Noble Truths for the first time in my life. I saw it in a book that somebody gave to me, Chief Reverend's first book, K. Sridharmananda. What Buddhists believe, the first edition, the red copy, thin copy. When I read the Four Noble Truths, very strange. At that age, I think 17 years old, all of a sudden, like I understood what that Four Noble Truths is. And deep inside my heart, I said, no need to search, this is it. Nobody in this universe, I say, 2,000 over years ago especially, like Sakyamuni Buddha, even if I were him, enlightened like him, I cannot summarize all my understanding into just Four Noble Truths like that. But the moment I read the Four Noble Truths, I understood the secret of life. I understood what life is all about. Everything is inside there. The mundane and the supramundane. That's why I had so much joy. And that moment onward, I never turned back. I just cultivate. So different people, different, like what you say. So if you wait for your time, you also can wait. But don't wait too long. Okay, we better end. It's getting late.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Can I let something?
Can.
Well, there may be many who remarks, I think it has been generally accepted that to attain enlightenment in this life is may not be possible. I think many have agreed to that view. But most important of all, if we do have that view that I'm not able to attain enlightenment in this life, that's already a wrong view. And our mind will automatically not put in effort to strive for it. So you must, in your own self, each and every one of us, we must have that confidence that we can attain enlightenment in this life. The next point is, we have to strive. Once we accept we can't attain, our mind automatically won't work for it. And that is a wrong view and an obstruction.
Just to add to what Brother Teh has said, it's in the teaching,
Because the Buddha already say you have faith in him and his teaching, then you will not doubt. Because the third noble truth already told you, suffering need not be enlightenment in the here and the now before this form and mind die. It's possible. Why do you still doubt? Understand? It's in the teaching. He told the monks at that time, and he proclaimed it, that this is a noble truth. No? This is not a hearsay thing. No? Oh. Because he went through that understanding, he perfected the wisdom, the enlightenment. And for many, many lives, he did it. That's why he knew it can be done before you die. So it's the faith, not your thought. Your thought will tell you different story, like Brother T said. Wrong thought will condition your fear, worry, anxiety, and lack of faith. Your doubt, understand? Because you doubt. Hey, the book also say, you know, now no more. Sotapan also cannot find. Why you waste your time? Oh, the thought will come back and tell you that way. So if you believe the thought, what happened? You will not move. But if you have faith in the Buddha and his teaching, which is what a true Buddhist is, a Buddhist devotee is, then it's a different thing. If I have faith in the Buddha, I believe what the Buddha said. I just try for new heedfulness. I don't want to know. Then whatever will be, will be. If you do like that, the outcome can be tremendously different. Okay.
Concluding for tonight, I think the Brother Gan will offer Brother Teo our token of appreciation.
Okay, Brother Chowaka, I will have to offer it to him. Will he provide me with a transport? Sadhu, 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 I rejoice. I rejoice with the wholesomeness. Then I offer back to Brother Chua. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And then he offer back to the center. So, no gain, no loss. So, that is what emptiness is all about. Lai ye kong, qi ye kong. Then finally return to where it is. When you understand, even though it's empty, but there is such thing as money, understand? The condition will recognize it. Even though it's condition arising, cause of phenomena, not so real, when you understand. But there is ultimate truth. The worldly truth, the mundane truth, can lead to the understanding of life, and you know how to use them. Even though it's impermanent, lead to suffering, the understanding will free you from all those delusions. Then you know how to use money. Like I shared with you, money is not the source of all evil. Money is just money, don't blame money. The use of money is very important. If the use of money is deluded, then money becomes evil. If the use of money is wise, money becomes wise. So likewise, you should reflect. The use of your thought is very important. If the use of this thought is deluded, not enlightened, you tell me what type of thought you are. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. We rejoice. We will do the sharing of marriage, transfer of merit. Then we will end. You make your aspiration. We recall to mind all of the great wholesomeness, meritorious action, that we have cultivated and developed. Together we shall share all this wholesomeness and transfer them to those who can receive them. Starting with the sharing of merit with the Deva. Akasatta cha bhumata devanaga mahindika punyantang anamoditva rakantu lokasasana Ita vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo อิดังเมญะทินังโหตุสุขิตาหันตุญาตโยอิดังเมญะทินังโหตุสุขิตาหันตุญาตโยอิมินาปุญญังกามินามาเมบาลาสมากโมสัตตังสมากโมโหตุยาวะนิวานะปัตติยาสาธุสาธุสาธุ Do pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end.